This is Storage Unpacked. Subscribe at storageunpacked.com.
This is Chris Evans recording another Storage Unpacked podcast, and I'm here with Martin. How are you, Martin?
Yeah, not too bad, Chris. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. Not too bad at all. Yes, don't think I can say anything more than that. That's probably the best thing to say.
We've got some nice weather, so that's good.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, we're heading into that sort of season, aren't we? So that's always good, a good thing to look forward to. Another thing we can look forward to is that this week we have two guests from Dell Technologies. We've got Devon Reed and we've got Dan Cummins. Devon, Dan, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
So let's start with, say, Devon, why don't you introduce yourself to the audience and tell them what you do, and then I'll let you do that after, Dan.
Yeah, sure. Thank you for having us, Chris and Martin. My name is Devon Reed. I'm Senior Director of Product Management for Dell Technologies Storage Business Unit. I'm responsible for a team that drives the roadmap and strategy for the mid-range and entry storage solutions. So that includes Unity, Unity XT, SC Series, and PowerVault. And like Dan Cummins, I've been with the PowerStore program since its inception and led the efforts on the product management side for PowerStore.
Dan?
Yep. So my name is Dan Cummins. I am the PowerStore Chief Architect. I'm a Senior Distinguished Engineer. That's about it.
Fantastic. Now, you said that you both said the same word, PowerStore, and that's what we're here to discuss today. We're going to talk about the new platform you released just this week, PowerStore, which is the mid-range solution for enterprise storage. So where should we start? Dan, do you want to dive in and tell us exactly what it looks like and what it is?
Certainly, I can start with that. So PowerStore represents a new innovation in the mid-range, and it's our next generation mid-range product architecture. It is a 2U, two-node scale-up architecture or scale-up product that can also scale out by clustering horizontally in a heterogeneous fashion. It offers both traditional block and file workloads through iSCSI and Fiber Channel support SIFS and NFS. And it also comes in a different consumption model where we embed a hypervisor, which enables our customers to embed their applications directly onto the storage array. So it's a pretty exciting platform.
Okay, lots to talk about, lots to dig into, but let's just set the scene slightly and say that this was actually a replacement for a number of other platforms that have come from the EMC acquisition and were already in the Dell portfolio. So this is like a harmonization of it, or you're sort of bringing together consolidation, I guess, of all the requirements that customers will have into a single platform.
Yeah, Chris, it's a little bit more than that, though. Right? Okay. So certainly we have a lot of products in the portfolio. And like any large company, you know, it costs a lot of money for us to operate those product lines. Some of them, are designed to fit certain workloads or certain parts of the market. Unity, for example, is still a very good fit today for hybrid, workloads where it mixes flash and spinning drives, right? But one of the things that, we looked at years ago was really how we were going to change our product architectures to support and take advantage of emerging media, right? How are we going to be able to drive low latency media, sub 20 microsecond media? And we're looking at our product architectures and, we decided that we really needed to start from the ground up. There were some other goals that we had that we really wanted to do on our products. For example, offering native inline deduplication, compression, data reduction technologies. We really wanted to get to a single mapping layer where we can provide a true active 10 provisioning subsystem. We really were looking at, okay, if we're going to focus on both performance and data reduction and also have, other features like native replication and things like that, we really had to rethink the storage architecture. So we started incubating around this new mapping technology, and we actually made a change in this architecture, which is a departure from the other architectures in the portfolios, is we've introduced a log structured storage system, right? Which was quite different than what we've done in the past. And the primary reason for doing that, really to be able to tightly pack data, right? We didn't want to have any gaps in the data so that we can get the best data reduction.
Okay, got you. So I'd like to go back and just talk about that from scratch, from the ground up type statement, and the reason I say that is because this time last year, we had a podcast between Martin, myself, and Chris Miller from The Register, or Blocks and Files, as he does now more. And we talked about what you were going to do and how you might do this going forward. Now, it was our assumption that you may take one of your existing platforms, repurpose it, or you might take technology from each of those platforms and repurpose it into an architecture and basically take the best bits of everything, or maybe just reuse the Unity platform and add in some additional features. But it sounds to me like you're saying that is absolutely not what you did in this instance.
Partially true. We would be a fool to not leverage the best in breed technologies or leverage some of the assets in our portfolio, right? While it is true that the entire data engine is built from the ground up, I already explained it's an all new strategy, but there are other parts and technologies that are found all across the portfolio that we did find pieces to leverage, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So for example, we were looking for kind of a user space, polling model to drive low latency media, right? Yeah. Certainly there's technologies out there like, DPDK and SPDK and other user space things, but we already had something, inside of our Extreme.io operating environment that we call Zios. When we're making our asset evaluation choice, we decided to actually leverage Zios as part of the PowerStore OS. And it was this framework that allowed us to start our development with next generation media. But apart from that, the data path itself is all new. One of the other things that we wanted to do too was, okay, how do we innovate faster? Right. So we were taking a look at the commoditization of virtualization architectures and the rise of container technology. And normally you would equate container technology to something like a cloud native or a microservices application, but we saw it a little bit differently. We saw it as an opportunity to be able to segregate our architecture such that we can bring innovation into this product at a much faster pace. We can also reduce silos of product features and innovations that were spattered all through the organization and focus on the best of breed technology and be able to onboard that. So the entire, under the hood, the entire architecture for PowerStore is basically a container-based architecture, but it's surrounded by this operating environment that we took from Extreme.io.
I'd like to comment, if I could here, and expand on what Dan has
said. Yeah, sure. Yeah, go for it.
While we did leverage some of the components and technologies across the various products that we have in our mid-range portfolio today, the thing that we should keep in mind is that we leverage the expertise of over 1,000 engineers that span across the infrastructure group and really brought the experience and the learnings over decades of experience in the storage industry to bear in this product. And what we really did was we tried to bring the most key value propositions of all of the products and combine them into this platform and expand on them. So what I mean by that, if you look at Unity is all about simplicity, it's about compact form factor, and it's all about the unified capabilities with block, file, and vvols. And we've done that and expanded on that in PowerStore. If you look at SC Series is our platform that has key capabilities like federation with the ability to move volumes from appliance to appliance. And we did that and expanded on it and built an ML engine directly into the storage system to reduce the operational cost for our customers to be able to recognize where those volumes should be placed and move them in the background. And then if you look at the third, it's Extreme.io. And Extreme.io is known for its reliable performance, its consistent performance capabilities, its scale-out capabilities, as well as its copy data management and snapshotting and cloning capabilities. And we've brought that to bear in PowerStore as well.
Okay, I mean, I personally would have thought it would have been a bit crazy. Martin, I'll let you comment in a second. I would have thought it'd been a bit crazy to have said, you know what, we're going to literally do everything from scratch and not make or take advantage of the other technologies that were in your portfolio, because you've got a huge amount of IP that you can call on in order to do all of these things. So, you know, literally doing something from scratch would have been crazy. And it would make sense to do what's happened, Martin. It was sort of what we were thinking anyway, wasn't it?
Yeah, we were thinking that you may base it on something like the Unity platform. Unity obviously has a very long heritage. It's been out there for probably 20 plus years now. So it's well understood. So taking some stuff from Unity, and now with the simplicity of a Unity environment, which is excellent now, that's kind of what we expected. I wasn't quite expecting you to take quite so much from all of the technologies. That sounds like a very difficult thing to go and do, and the integration challenges must have been huge.
Well, be careful there, right? So it's really the mind share. And yes, there was some code that was taken, right? But the fundamental architecture is actually all new, right? So, you know, one of the things that we never had was, a single mapping layer, right? That was active, that natively supported in a single mapping layer, snapshots and clones and everything else. So, and it's done in a different way than what Unity is doing, and certainly what Extreme.io is doing.
So, yeah, obviously, I mean, you know, trying to bring all of these technologies together, it's not like a patchwork. I understand it's going to be things like concepts and ideas and IP and all of the, you know, the ideas that sit behind the platforms rather than plugging pieces together. That's not what we're saying, I guess, here. But, you know, you're saying it's about using that IP to build the right solution going forward from scratch.
Yeah, right. It's really about taking the mindshare and the experience of, the engineering teams and being able to align for the goals that we tried to accomplish, and leveraging that mindshare to develop the best in breed technology.
Okay, good. So we've got a new platform. It's both scale out and scale up, which means that customers can choose to build out onto the Base2U node, add additional storage into that node that's NVMe based, expand based on SAS, but then they can scale out as well. So they can do both in the configuration.
Yeah, so it was very important for us that as we look at the mid-range market, you know, it's very price sensitive. So size matters and performance matters, performance density. So, you know, we have this mantra of do more with less, but do it easily. We were also looking at alternate use cases. Right. So one thing was clear, you know, I mean, Devin and I, you know, we went out and we spoke to many customers and partners and really got their feedback. And, you know, one thing that was clear to me is to support the new use cases as well as the existing workloads is they want the ability in the mid-range to be able to control their cost. And to us, that really meant, well, you know, that really has, you know, the requirement basically becomes, you know, how do you control infrastructure sprawl in the mid-range solution. It basically comes down, how do you scale compute and storage and network independently in a heterogeneous fashion? And so that's what we provided with PowerStore, is the ability to do exactly that. So a customer can start with a single 2U enclosure, and they can scale up. They can scale up, you know, this, you can put 100 drives behind a storage array, and then you can scale that out by, you know, clustering that with up to three other appliances for a total of four appliances, but each appliance could be heterogeneous in fashion. What we're not doing is we're not distributing the data of a volume across the cluster. The data for a particular volume stays within the HA appliance, okay? And the reason we chose that is because, you know, transactional performance is very important. We talk about performance density, right? And especially if you're going to introduce low latency media, you want the fastest, you know, lowest latent access to that media, right? So enable for us to control our custom, to help our customers control their cost and to satisfy the plethora of workloads that they have. And we wanted to provide, we felt that the 2U2 node, you know, starting point was a good point, and it also provided the performance and the low latency that we needed in order to drive that new media. So that's why we started with that as an architecture.
If I look at the idea of using scale out and scale up in different use cases, if you were building something that was scale out that was tightly coupled and it wasn't in the sort of federated model like you've gone with it, in the way that you've done the design, you would have an issue there with the interconnects, and you'd have to end up putting in some pretty high speed interconnects or some expensive interconnects. And if you're saying customers are very cost sensitive, that sort of design just wouldn't fly, because then you've introduced a whole additional cost layer, which they perhaps just don't want to invest in.
Yeah, yeah. And that was the thinking, right? It's not that, you know, a horizontally distributed data plane is a bad architecture. It's a very good architecture, right? But it presents some cost challenges to our mid-market customers, right? So we're really looking for the ultimate flexibility to help them control their cost. And also, you know, if you think about kind of where we sell, the price bands that we sell into, especially the lower price bands, because of its size, performance, and its capability, you know, it can be basically installed anywhere, right? Mm-hmm. So really being conscious also about the floor space requirements, the power requirements, the cooling requirements, you know, where can we proliferate this solution to help our customers, right? So it was very important for us to understand that.
And I'd like to add on, Dan was talking about our discussions with lots and lots of partners and customers when we first started this. And what we found was there were two or three trends that we were constantly hearing over and over. And one was that there was just this massive avalanche of data that was hard to get a grips on. It was costly. So, and the second was, not only were there CapEx pressures in the environment, but there were also, you know, customers had operational cost pressures as well. And really they're sort of conflicting. And what we were finding is the enterprise storage solutions in the market really weren't addressing both. They were really addressing the former. And when we stepped back, we needed to build a system for the data era that addressed both of these needs. So while we have the federated capability, we also built a AI ML engine directly into the cluster. All the management is embedded on the appliances, no separate management appliance. And we take a lot of the operational complexity of managing multiple appliances out of the equation and save a lot of operational costs for our customers.
I just want to ask Martin a question there, and that's really relating to the idea of the scale up and the scale out. And to, you know, first of all, Martin, do you think you would you use both scale up and scale out in your environment as an example? And secondly, just sort of tied to that, it just makes me think that as the guys have described what they've just said, that there is a bit of an issue here in the fact that the mid-range could span a huge range of different customer configurations and sizes.
Okay, so answer your first question. Would I use scale up and scale out? Probably not at the moment. I'd use a scale up, and if I have to scale again, I will probably build another storage silo. It's just the way our operational procedures would work. If I needed a scale out, scale up, what you've described, I mean, EMC do have a product which could do that, and I could have that properly scale out with any of the storage nodes being able to see any of the data. We could do that with PowerMax, and we already do. So this platform doesn't meet the specific use case I would tend to use Unity for, but it would make a good replacement for Unity. I don't actually have to change anything. Now, there's always been an issue in the mid-range, and it's always been a discussion with vendors. Where does mid-range start and where does it finish? There's always been an overlap. There's been an overlap in the historical Dell EMC product range. Different vendors will describe their product as mid-range when they're enterprise, or I would call them enterprise. Sometimes it feels like the only definition of enterprise, we've had this conversation before, was an enterprise array will support mainframe connectivity. If it doesn't support mainframe connectivity, you can't call it an enterprise array. But that's changed very rapidly now. And obviously, there have been other vendors who've never really supported. There's only three vendors who really support mainframe connectivity anyway. So, yeah, but that's the problem with mid-range. And mid-range covers a multitude of sins. You can do it in many ways. You could, as has been done in the Unity, and I would expect to see something similar in this space, you could almost deploy it as a software appliance if you really wanted to, but taking it all the way up to the hardware. So you could have petabytes. We're talking about mid-range arrays which can support petabytes of storage. That seems crazy. When you and I started, a mid-range array would be a few terabytes, nowhere near a petabyte.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, very true. Yeah, so it's a much wider market, isn't it?
In the PowerStore system, we support almost 3 petabytes of effective capacity in a single appliance. And if you cluster those together with our 4 appliance capability, you're nearing 11 petabytes of effective capacity in a single appliance managed by a single console.
Yeah, so they're huge, and they could be huge environments, couldn't they? So you are sort of designing for a significant range of potential customer configurations.
Well, so one thing I don't think you guys are really thinking about, and I'm not trying to be, confrontational here, is that, you're looking at traditional workloads or traditional use cases, right? What you need to understand is that, IT infrastructure is expanding, kind of outward from the data center, right? And so you really have to think of it in terms of how is the market expanding at the edge, and what are the use cases for the cloud, and how do I operationalize, across the edge, the core, and the cloud? So one space that you can look at, and I don't think many people are really understanding really how to attack this market yet, is looking at the edge. Okay, so there's a proliferation of streaming data from sensors, connected vehicles, retail, and they need to provide real-time insights, okay? Now, normally what happens is, in order to provide those real-time insights or do this inferencing at the edge, typically that data is shipped directly to the cloud. They run a machine learning model, they develop a new model, then they push that model back to the edge, right? And that could be costly in terms of egress fees and everything like that for transporting this data to and from the cloud. And at the edge, you need something that's small and powerful that has actually scale-up capacity, right? That can be deployed there, where you can do either pre-processing of data, you can run your Spark or Flink analytic jobs, you could do your edge inferencing. So that part of the market is going to be really expanding, right? How do you kind of attack that market? Well, if you take a look at what we've done with apps on with PowerStore X, that kind of fits that use case. So it's really much more, much more than just the traditional workloads. You also have to think about the new use cases where this can expand into. And one of the reasons why we're really excited about it.
Okay. I mean, we hadn't got to that point, and I understand obviously why you're sort of pushing us down that direction. It makes complete sense to talk about the apps on side of things. So let's do that now. Let's go get into what that really means. Because to be fair, first of all, you could look at it and say there are other products and offerings in the portfolio that already do something similar of merging workloads together. We call them HCI. But also this has been done before, hasn't it? So there was an attempt to do this with VMAX 3. And I believe there was even a demonstration of VNX in 2013 that may have tried to do this before. So why do you feel that this is something that is a good thing to put onto the platform now? And what do you think people are going to use it for?
Yeah, Chris, I'd like to first introduce what we did with AppsOn.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead. Yeah, give us the detail.
I don't think we've really introduced the concept of AppsOn here. So what we did was we took our container-based, microservices-based operating system, and we abstracted it from the hardware, and we put it into a virtual machine, a VMware virtual machine, and we put vSphere ESXi directly on our HA storage appliance, and we delivered the core data path and operating system of PowerStore in a VM directly on the appliance on the ESX hypervisor. And what this enabled us to do was to not only serve external hosts with Fibre Channel and iSCSI external storage capabilities, but it also enables us to deploy standard VMs directly onto the storage system. So a customer can purchase a PowerStore with just external storage capabilities, or they can purchase the PowerStore with the AppsOn capability that comes with a bundled hypervisor to provide the same capabilities plus the ability to run these applications on. Now, there are general purpose HCI vendors in the market. VxRail is the leading HCI platform in the world, but we feel that there's a growing pie here, and it's a very complementary solution to VxRail. And what we're targeting this for is really data-centric, data-intensive applications. Applications that are seeking low latency response times, high deduplication rates, high capacity rates. And that's where we're positioning PowerStore apps on.
So would this expose the ESXi hypervisor directly to the customer so that if they were using it in their environment, it would be part of their vSphere management? Would it literally look just like another cluster within that environment?
Yeah, Chris, let me dive into this. There's a bit more to the story. You know, when we containerize our architecture, you know, I already mentioned before that we were looking at the attempted commoditization of virtual machine technology through the use of Docker containers, right? And that was a technology trend that we ended up taking advantage of, right? But one of the things what we were looking at was, you know, every product that I've ever worked on has always been designed to do more with less. The best products in the world are the ones that make your life easier, right? And so that's what we were thinking, right? And so there is a place for, you know, a mid-range array to be able to start to consolidate, you know, compute and storage, right? To bring those apps locally. And when we initially looked at this, we said, okay, well, we can take, you know, a customer's containerized application and we can run it right inside of our environment. Well, we quickly learned that, no, you really can't do that because there's severe security and isolation problems because, you know, the kernel is shared between the containers, right? So that's no good. So you saw, you know, a bunch of companies out there trying to solve this with, you know, microkernels and you know, other solutions, you know, different distributions, you know, that had just enough virtualization around the containers to solve the problem. At the end of the day, you need a hypervisor there to protect you, you know, to address the security and the isolation problem. And a lot of people kind of overlook that, right? And I don't think that the open source industry or the industry as a whole has really solved that problem. So until that is solved, containers are never a replacement for virtual machines, right? So now you talk about, okay, well, if a customer is going to, if we want to really provide that next level of consolidation, either they have secondary applications that they can run on there, or, you know, we've got all this new NVMe and these SCMs and low latency media, how do we provide the value of that to the application? Well, if they did have a data hungry application, we would like to deliver that and allow them to host it there, right? You know, if they wanted to build some sort of special purpose solution, but they didn't want to have the same infrastructure sprawl that, you know, some of these other solutions can have. And I already talked about it, you know, floor space requirements, rent, cooling, network infrastructure sprawl, you know, everything else. You know, what can we do there? So, you know, we looked to our partner VMware and, you know, we talked to them about this and we said, hey, we would like to be able to, say, partition our resources and be able to run ESX as the native operating system, where we would install our operating environment inside of a guest virtual machine and then allow customers to run their applications in virtual machines side by side. And that would allow us to solve for the security and the isolation issues. And we wanted it natively integrated with the vSphere environment. And we talked about that clustering before where, you know, it's a loosely coupled set of HA pairs. We need to both load balance both compute and storage, and so we want it natively integrated with DRS, right? And so we've done that. But what's unique about it is that if you look at it, it's kind of a virtual storage appliance. You know, the same operating system that runs on our bare metal Linux in a normal power store is put into a VM in its run. But how do you gain access to sub 20 microsecond media from a guest VM? And you're trying to virtualize the storage on the back end. So we want our guest drivers, right, to be able to drive that low latency media and to provide the same performance capability that our bare metal appliance would. So we work very closely with both our partners, VMware and Intel, to develop some technology that allows us to segregate all of the PCI Express devices into its own subdomain that bypasses the hypervisor. Okay. And with that implementation, we're the only ones in the market today that have this solution. What that solution enables us to do, it allows us to do things like, you know, provide true plug and play, you know, in this VSA environment. It allows us to control and isolate PCI Express errors. It allows us to drive and manage the performance of that device, right? So, and we virtualize that and we bring it back through the hypervisor to the guest VMs in a multi-path way, such that if our container or our VM, you know, were ever to go down, say we have to upgrade it or, you know, we have a software bug or something like that, you know, the VM stays running. It's just using an alternate path to the peer node to get access to its storage. So in a sense, you know, we've done a lot of innovation in this area, and it's quite different than what's out there in the market today.
Okay, because I mean, otherwise, you know, and you going and explaining that in a bit more detail, Dan, is very important, because clearly the most obvious thing people will say is that there is then an immediate conflict of resources in an environment where the storage component is sitting there purely as a guest of the other, of an operating system hypervisor that could be competing with the applications that are running there. So,
yeah, let me explain to you what we did there. Okay, beyond just the ability to control the hardware and to bypass the hypervisor so that we can drive the low latency media and to handle plug and play and perform fault containment and everything else, right? We also had to solve the noisy neighbor problem where, you know, ESX would schedule user VMs onto the same cores that our storage function was running, our storage VM was running, right? So we worked very closely with VMware to basically come up with a model that allows the CPUs not to overschedule between our PowerStore controller VM and the user VM. So they're completely isolated. And then one of the things that we did was we said, okay, well, how much CPU and memory do we want to dedicate for user applications, for user VMs, user guests, right? So our vision was, you know, to kind of have this flexible. But, you know, given the time to market constraints and everything that we had, we said, okay, well, for right now, and keep it simple, we're going to do 50% of the resources. And then once the product gets out into the market and we kind of see where the use cases really evolve for this thing, we would go back and we would say, okay, let's allow the user to kind of flex the amount of resources that they have or provide some intelligence that allows us to flex, you know, how much of our controller VM memory and storage performance do they need to serve those VMs as well as serve external hosts, right? Because one of the unique things that we can do is we serve external hosts with, you know, block and file protocol at the same time serving the block protocols to the local VMs.
So does that mean this is a different version of ESX that a traditional deployment would use? That was in any traditional deployment or even within, say, VxRail?
There were special drivers in ESX that were developed, and those were introduced, and those features to support our solution were released in 6.7 update 2 and beyond. So our base operating environment for PowerStore with a hypervisor on PowerStore, we support 6.7 and up.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, and just to address that, it's not a proprietary ESX version. It's a standard version of vSphere.
Okay, no, fair enough. I'd just bring in Martin. Anything you want to add in, Martin?
As you mentioned, Chris, I mean, the concept of running your data workloads closer to storage has been tried before. It's been announced before. Dell or it in the form of EMC have announced it in the past. IBM have certainly spoken about it way back, probably over 20 years ago. They talked about running data-intensive workloads, say a DB2 or an Oracle within the Shark, because the Shark was just an AI Xbox, which had virtualization built in. And it's never really taken. Do you now have a feeling that people are ready for this idea?
Yeah, let me address that one. So if you take all of these examples, they've never gone to the level of integration and simplicity that we have done here with PowerStore. So first and foremost, we've leveraged standard vSphere capabilities, and we've done deep integration like Dan just talked about in great depth. The other thing that we did is a great deal of orchestration and integration from an operational perspective. So when a customer buys a PowerStore with AppsOn capability, it comes out of the factory with vSphere ESXi loaded on it, the images loaded on it. You auto-discover the appliance. You provide the normal initial configurations, some of your network configurations. And then from there, we have automated all of the container creation, the protocol endpoint, the mappings, everything you need, the integration with the vSphere. And after that 15 minutes of initial configuration, everything is done for the user. And all that user has to do is log into vCenter and start deploying their applications. It's one of the most simple things I've ever seen in my life. And that is the huge difference. One of the huge differences.
Personally, I would say that what Martin's talked about there a minute ago was there's a lot of what you might class as very traditional core data center enterprise type integrations and platforms. From what I gained from what you said earlier, the two of you, there's a significant opportunity that this could be used at the edge more, and it could be used as part of a data workflow process. It could be used as part of a pre-processing of data before it's shipped into the core environment by the customer. So it could well be that the more attractive use for this technology is at the edge, where you've got the ability to run a slightly different type of workload than a traditional, you know, database sitting in a normal data center.
Yeah, you know, Chris, we've leading up to the launch of PowerStore, we've had numerous conversations, you know, countless conversations with customers and partners. And really, how the conversation starts is customers are scratching their head and they're trying to figure out, first of all, their head is exploding. They're trying to understand the concept. The second phase of that is, well, why would I want that? And then you start to talk to them about the flexibility of the platform, the flexibility of the deployment use cases, the ability to run it within their infrastructure, within an enterprise fiber channel SAN. And it really gets the juices flowing with the customers. And by the end of the conversation, you have a room of 20 customers or partners going from, I don't get it, I don't know why you built this, to, oh, I have three or four use cases right now that I want to use this thing in.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. You know, another thing that I'll add is, you know, for every executive briefing center, you know, conversation we've been in with the customers, what has rang to me loud and clear, and I get this question a lot, you know, customers will say to me, hey, Dan, how come you don't offer object in the mid-range storage array? And I would say to them, it's like, well, why would you need object in the mid-range storage array? We have solutions that offer object. And they come back and said, well, you know, based on my budget and my demand, I don't need to spend for that much larger expensive solution. I don't have the demand or the budget for it yet. So if you offered me just a little bit of this capability, that would get me by until I'm ready to buy a much larger, more purpose-built solution that can attack that space, right? To solve my need. And to me, that was pretty eye-opening, right? It's like, okay, well, in our architecture, we need to have the ability to be able to onboard some of these technologies to give a little bit of this or a little bit of that to help the customers with their journey. So again, it goes back to one of the reasons we selected a container-based architecture, right? Can we start to leverage some of the capabilities that we have in the products within our portfolio, you know, and offer a little bit of it to our customers?
I guess you're saying we can expect ECS or something like ECS appear in this at some point.
So certainly we're building a software-defined base. And we're looking to leverage the assets in a containerized way across a portfolio and instantiate them to solve different use cases for our customers at the portfolio level. I mean, you can even think of Trident with its native data services and replication services and everything else also being offered as a service in the future.
So we've gone into a lot of detail there, and clearly, you know, that's very, very technical focused. Gone into some really interesting pieces there that possibly have helped to understand those nuances around why you've designed the technology like you have. Now, this platform is available today, or is it available today? I should have asked that first rather than assuming it's available today. Is it available for customers today?
Yes, absolutely. So it's available today. We did the worldwide launch of PowerStore on Tuesday, May 5th, and it's been internally available for quoting since April 22nd. We've already shipped some units to customers.
Okay. And in terms of being able to see how it works, are there any demos or is there anything people can go and look at that gives them both a look and feel about this and even try it out?
Yeah, there's a live demo produced by our Customer Solutions Center that you can access online on the Dell.com website.
It's a fully interactive demo. It's really nice. Other people should have a look at that. That's a way to do a marketing demo. Really, really nice. Very impressed with that.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, brilliant. Well, we'll tell you what we'll do then. We'll link to all of that so everybody has got that. But I think we do need to come back and have another discussion around things like how people are going to do the transition, migration strategies, you know, consumption models. There's a lot that obviously we haven't included this time. So maybe we can come back again, have that second discussion and learn a bit more. But for now, guys, thanks very much for joining. And look forward to catching up with you soon.
All right, great. Thanks for having us.
You've been listening to Storage Unpacked. For show notes and more, subscribe at storageunpacked.com. Follow us on Twitter at Storage Unpacked or join our LinkedIn group by searching for Storage Unpacked Podcast. You can find us on all good podcatchers, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. Thanks for listening.